Listen, man. I was hurt, bro.
Dude, I was actually going to invite you, but I was like building in my head the way I make these events is I put everyone who I invite on the website and in the graphic. We've had other people get upset too. There was definitely no reason that you weren't invited because.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Boss Podcast. Today, who's the boss? I have two gentlemen here. One that goes by the name of Romer the Romer, aka Avery Martin. He's the only person that I know that's lived in his car by choice. When he first started, he sold books, does RA, and has scaled up a multi-person entrepreneurial events thrown across the country. He's traveled across the country selling on Amazon as he's traveled throughout the world. And we also have Taylor Jones. I hope that's even your real full name. If it's not, you can let me know. But I just know you as Taylor Jones. Sometimes Jones might be your middle name. Who knows? But we got these two guys on here right now. They're going to talk about their story, where they've come from, where they're going, and where they've been. So, guys, I want to welcome you guys to the Boss Podcast. I appreciate you guys being here. What up, everybody?
Woo!
Thanks for the intro, Richie.
So, first of all, I mean, you know, I know about you too because I know Romer and then I met Taylor. You guys used to be separate entities. And when I say separate entities, meaning Romer was doing his thing, Taylor Jones was doing his thing, and then you guys, something had happened in the universe where you had come together, and now you guys are probably, I would say, you guys are considered one.
We're getting ready for our first baby next month, actually.
and I've worked with both of you as far as like going out sourcing or attending events that you guys have thrown, and I'm grateful to have those opportunities with you guys. I did this background for you guys because I know you guys both have sourced books, and I figured you guys can maybe come to my multi-million dollar house in the Amazon here and scan all these books and see what we can do.
That's a really clean like cut.
Isn't that clean?
Do you have an actual green screen?
I do.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah, because when you do that virtual, it starts looking cloudy around you and shit. And I'm like, I don't like that. I just like the regular green screen. So I followed you for a long time. If you want to just tell everybody, what do you do? Because people see you. They've seen you in the past. They've seen you living in your car. They've seen you scanning books. They've seen you doing retail arbitrage. They've seen you hosting events full of hundreds of people. They've seen you traveling the world. So if you just want to kind of give people a little idea of where you've come from, what do you actually do?
Yeah, so my claim to fame is I lived in my car like 5 years ago, summer 2018. I coached wrestling that year and it paid me $1,500. You know, I was like listening to Gary Vee and he was like, you know, follow your passion, post on social media. So I was actually doing those things a little bit before selling on Amazon. Like I didn't just start posting selling on Amazon to like become a guru or anything like that. I was posting because I listened to Gary Vee prior, and then I actually did wrestling because Gary Vee is like, follow your passion. My passion didn't pay me shit. And then another thing that I've always just had like an innate desire is to travel the whole world, and I didn't have any money. So I'm like, let me just start with America. I'll live in my fucking car. It's going to be okay. Like I'm tough. I've camped before. A car is better than a tent. A car, you can like, you can survive a tornado or a hurricane in a car. Like it's like a little miniature house. And so I was really grateful for the car, even though it was a shitty Toyota Corolla. And I knew Reezy Resells and Caleb Roth were making a lot of money with used books, like a lot of money. Like there's a lot of money in used books. 10% of Amazon sales are book sales. And that's I had crazy. Already made money selling my books in college. So like I was like, okay, I've already made a few thousand dollars doing this. I could probably do what Caleb's doing. Caleb went to Tulsa, Oklahoma with his wife. And in 1 weekend, they made $5,000 profit just sourcing libraries and Goodwills around Tulsa. And I'm like, if they did that in one city, I could just do that in every city in America, small towns, big towns. I could go see the Grand Canyon, Pacific Coast Highway. I've literally seen like everything out west from this trip I did. And I did 80,000 sales my first year, probably made 30, 40 grand true net profit. But that opened the doors for me to selling everything. And it also opened doors, not to get too much into it, but basically me posting on social media opened so many doors to I run a business called restrictedinventory.com. People send me their books and it's still alive today. I've been through a ton of account shutdowns and I've sold other products on Amazon. Like I've been through a lot of shit, but my network that I've created, and I really created this network through posting on social media and going to conferences and just putting myself out there. It's kind of made me robust and it's been beautiful over the years, you know, going on this journey. So now I do wholesale and I have a software company, GoToLister. Been working on that for a couple of years. I still sell books, but my book business is all textbooks from restrictedinventory.com. And that was like the first time I ever monetized my audience. Like I had 5,000 Instagram followers from my travels. People were, you know, what's this kid up to? You remember this? Like I was going to New York, I was going to Boston, I was going everywhere.
Yeah.
And I kind of built this little following, and then I found out not everybody could sell textbooks. And so everybody sent me their textbooks and started selling them on consignment. And that made me my first true six figures in profit, which was an amazing feeling as like a young man.
So that 80,000 that you first made, was that generated from taking the 1500 from your wrestling coaching job and then kind of like flipping that into more money and just kind of snowballing it until you had that 80K for that year?
I had about $1,000 in my name and then like a $4,000 Bank of America credit card. That's how I started. And I thought I could live off of $250 a month in my car. And boy, was I wrong. I was spending like a grand plus. I was spending like $1,500 a month, which I was like, that blew my mind back then. I remember thinking that was so much money. Now I look back, I'm like, that was actually pretty good. $1,500 is not bad.
Listen, Romer, I remember seeing your videos in the real early days, and you were teaching people how to tape up their windows so they couldn't see in if you were sleeping in your car, and to always go into a Walmart parking lot because it was always well lit and you had truckers that would stop there, so it was relatively safe. I remember you telling people on the videos, you were teaching people, hey, you know, you can essentially live out of your car because you could get a gym membership, like a $10 a month at a Planet Fitness, and take a shower every day at the gym, or you could get breakfast for free by like sourcing, researching hotels and where to go to and stuff. Like I paid attention, bro, because you were one of the people that I watched when I first started Retail Arbitrage. And I was like, yo, I was like, who is this guy living out of his car? And then as I watched you, you know, you would repeatedly say, listen, because people would ask in your comments, they'd say, are you homeless or something, dude? Like, and you would like, no, like this is like my choice. I'm choosing to live in my car and travel around and see how I could work that. So much, much respect to that. I mean, and before
we just lose perspective sometimes, because the Indians lived in like teepees, which would suck. Imagine like a tornado or like a heavy storm coming. A teepee's not going to do shit. Like maybe it kind of protects you, but being in a Toyota Corolla is so much better than that.
But Taylor, I wanted to ask you too. I would see you on social media and I would see you doing Retail Arbitrage at the time that I was doing Retail Arbitrage. And somehow you always found like these pretty girls to come with you, follow you around, record you, all this good shit, right? You always made sure you had some kind of attractive woman with you, which I can respect. Because, I mean, look, it gets views. People are going to look. Even if they don't look at you in the Retail Arbitrage, they're going to be like, oh, who's this chick, right? They're going to say, who's this girl?
That was my marketing
strategy. My marketing strategy, absolutely. So what did you start with? And, like, what made you get into the Retail Arbitrage and selling on Amazon Business?
I graduated college at, what, like 21? And I would always do, like, landscaping jobs here and there. But I didn't really have a good relationship with, like, money. Like, I wasn't thinking about making money. Like my parents always said, like, oh, if you play sports, you don't need a job, you know? So I was like, all right. And I was getting federal aid from the government when I was in college because my, you know, parents were divorced. So I didn't really realize how broke I was until about 22 and like working a minimum wage job. And then it kind of hit me. I was like, damn, like I'm really broke. But I was going through a spiritual journey at that time. Like, and I realized, once I realized I was broke, I started following Gary Vee and Grant Cardone, you know, and Grant
seems to be the common denominator here, right? Gary Vee seems to be the common denominator for all of us.
Grant Cardone was like, you should be in sales. You need to learn how to sell. And that kind of made sense to me. So I got into sales. Yeah. One of the turning points is I had a cousin come over. This is probably like, I just got done with my international travels. I've got a sales job. I'm at Xerox, you know. I'm probably 24 at the time, I think, something like that, 23. And he comes over for Thanksgiving and he shows me his eBay screenshot. He's got like 10,000 in sales and he's a software developer and he's just flipping stuff on the side. I'm like, yo, if this, like my cousin, you know, he's a smart guy, but not like, you know, genius. I'm like, if my cousin Rob can do this, I can figure it out. So I just went to TJ Maxx and I flipped a couple things and then I found out about Amazon through TikTok and I got into I watched one Reezy video and similar to Avery, I only had probably 1,000, maybe 2,000 bucks. And I just went to Walmart and Target and I found stuff pretty quick, like in the first couple of days. And then I basically made a commitment, like I'm going to do this every day after work.
So you didn't start off selling books?
No, I never.
Went straight to RA.
Yeah. I went straight to RA. And
I converted him to books for like a week.
I did books for a month at the end of my first year. I did books for a month and I was like, I don't like it. But I think I made like 30, 40 grand similarly to Avery my first year. And then when I met Avery, that was the first, other than Jameson, I met Avery and Jameson right around the same time, the end of my first year in business. And that totally took my business to the next level, because I started looking at it from how I can incorporate systems and automate things with an assistant and go completely online. And that's one of the inspirations we had for the Miami Sellers Conference, is we realized that some of all of the biggest jumps that we take, not only in our income, but in our business, and is usually linked to a relationship that we develop. Where people are such relationship focused. So that's why we started the MSC, to bring people together, and the rest is history.
I mean, Taylor, you started off with RA, you went into Walmart, Target. And for those of you that don't know, Amazon has a program. Well, I guess not a program, kind of like a business model, Amazon FBA, FBA standing for Fulfilled by Amazon, where you can go out, you could buy things at any store. It doesn't necessarily have to be clearance items, but usually it's clearance items because you need to get it cheap enough in order to sell it on Amazon. And what you do is you take these items that you buy, you have an app that you can use, just to put in simple, basic terms. You have an app, you can scan it. It tells you upfront fees, except for shipping. And you can kind of make a decision that if you want to sell a $5 product for a $30 product, you could take 100 of those $5 products, send them into Amazon, where Amazon will store it in their warehouse. They'll ship it to the customer when the customer buys it, blah, blah, blah. And then the rest is history. That's kind of like a very, very simple explanation without getting into logistics of shipping, prepping, and all that other shit. So going back to Avery, I mean, when you lived in your car, you had that Toyota Corolla for a long time, man. I mean, I've seen you taking seats out of that thing. You had the damn canoe on the roof all the time. You had the canoe on the roof. You were missing seats so you could fit like boxes.
He got rid of it now.
It got rid of me, man. I would still be driving that thing. Like, I
how many
still,
miles did you put on it?
It just broke down. I went to Colombia and Spain and Puerto Rico, Cuba, Mexico for like a year. And I came back and that thing just didn't work.
How many miles were on it before it kicked the bucket?
I want to say like just under 300,000 maybe.
Sheesh.
Dude, Avery, you inspired me, because I had cars break down so much. And when I saw his Toyota lasting that long, I was like, all right. And I bought my first car.
We bought our cars at the same time.
I bought a Toyota, yeah.
He got a 4Runner. Yeah. I got a RAV4. So
nice.
Yeah.
But like within the same day, being told me, I'm like, bro, I'm getting a RAV4. And so yeah, it's funny.
Nice. I mean, what made you like, you said you traveled to all these different countries. What made you say, hey, you know what? I can run my business from abroad. I don't physically need to have a presence in the United States. And how did you run your business from abroad internationally?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it has those four quadrants. And it basically, there's like, you work for someone else, it's like one level of making money, which you can make a lot of money if you're like a doctor or something. Then there's being self-employed. Then there's like running a business but being involved with it. And then the final quadrant, I think, is like investor, where you just take your money and it makes you more money by investing in things that have high return. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to be in those. I think it was the bottom two quadrants. I was like, I want to create something like that. But I kind of got stuck in the trap of thrifting all the time. And I say trap, it's not really a trap, but you don't want to work for yourself forever. And so I was reading other books, Work the System, The E-Myth, and all these books were talking about eventually you have to create like systems so you never have to touch your business again. It just creates money on autopilot. So I always had that intention in the back of my head since like 2018, but I knew it was grind time. Like, I needed to put all this work in. And then as time went on, I finally got an opportunity just to have all the books come to me without sourcing them. And once I got that, that's all I needed. I systematized the whole thing. I got the books to come to me. I got the books to be listed by somebody else, repriced, and basically like automated the whole thing. And I took a step back. I'm like, okay, this no longer needs me physically. And then I was like, and I was making money. So I'm like, this is time to travel. I can run this wherever. Yeah. I think the first place I went was Miami, lived with Steve Rakin for a year, Rakin Profit.
I remember that.
Jones. Then I started traveling to Colombia, went to Barcelona and all those other places, Mexico.
You guys were, you guys were making so much money in Miami that you guys were throwing dollar bills or stuff off the balcony as fucking paper airplanes. And you guys were saying, oh, let's see where it lands. And I remember Steve Rakin on the balcony just throwing friggin' paper airplanes. And he would always say, oh, Romer's in there making a video, but I'm going to sit here. I'm going to throw some money off the balcony. I'm like, what do you do? He threw a $20 bill off there one time. And he was like,
Yeah, dude, that
was
so
he's like, oh, what is it? He's like, oh, shit, I can't see it. I can't see
it. That was so fun to watch. They would just like, you could watch it for like 20 minutes. We got paper airplanes and threw them out. We could have gotten in trouble.
Oh, my God.
But that was grind time, man.
Why did you leave Miami? Never get
an opportunity. What did you say?
Why did you leave Miami?
Taylor left, and I was lonely. Honestly, it's probably part of it. But he left. I was rooming with someone else, and then like Taylor was traveling, and it's my goal to travel too. And I had FOMO. I'm like, I'm not just gonna fucking sit here and not travel. And it was cheaper to travel. It was literally cheaper to go to Colombia. It cost me less money down there. And I got to learn Spanish, 60% fluent. And I got to dance salsa every day. And it's like, what do you like about Miami? I like the Cuban culture there. I like salsa dancing, girls. Well, all that's way better in Latin America, you know? So yeah. I just moved there.
Yeah, Miami was a blast. So we had a good time. We had a good time there.
Yeah, no, Miami, I love Miami. I love being in Miami. I love being in the center of it all. I love meeting people in Miami. It's just something, I don't know if it's, if the sun's out, buns out mentality, or if it's just like the sun is out.
The city is an energy to it for sure.
It's just there's such an energy to it, man.
You know, the dark side of it is like flashiness and like competitiveness. Like if you want to call it the dark side, but the good side is like high energy, ambition, big dreams. You know, that's what I mean,
even when I'm driving there, whether it like at nighttime and you just see that skyline, you're coming over the bridge and you just see all the buildings light up. I'm just like, man, this has to be the most beautiful skyline in the country. It's just, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you traveled the world, you went to Colombia, you've traveled much. Is it fair to say you've traveled much of South America or you stayed in
just Colombia? Yeah.
And now are you guys back in Miami or?
No, I'm here in Nashville now.
Nashville. And that's originally where you're from, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I moved back here. I was in Mexico and I was just like, I don't know if this is good for me. Like too many girls. Just like I was like a superstar down there. And also like I just really have a vision of growing my business over the next couple of years. I was like, let me just get back home, put my nose down to the grindstone and grind away. That's why I came back. So
let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you guys this. How is it? Well, first of all, are you guys involved in like a love life? Any of you?
I'm getting married this summer.
You're getting married?
I'm getting married, yeah.
Taylor Jones, who hopped on top of Walmart carts and all that stuff. We're getting married? Okay.
This little girl.
Congrats.
Thank you, brother.
Congrats. My question was going to be that, you know, like I'm a family man. I've got a family. It's hard enough to be a family man and run a business. And I know you guys like run multiple businesses in different aspects. How do you juggle that? You know, for Romer, if he's not involved in a love life, it might be easier for him. But I know even Romer has,
you know, three, four, five. I think that's a myth. And I'll explain why. So if you're single and you want to be with a lot of girls, you have to go out to find different girls. You have to court them. It's like a lot of work, you know? Like
it's a lot of work today.
Yeah, exactly. But like, okay, my developer for GoTo Lister, he's my partner in the business, and he works fully like 10 to 14 hours a day. And I'm like, how is this guy who's married with kids working more than me? And it's like, oh, I'm salsa dancing every night. And I'm like doing these things. And like, sometimes it fucks with me. I'm like, oh, I need somebody right now. It's just like, it's like this need in your life that you want to fill, but he literally can work all the time, go to the bedroom, chill with his wife, come back, work, spend an hour with his kids, super fulfilling, and then go work again. Like where with me, you know, I guess I don't need someone, but it's definitely like an internal desire we have where it's like, sometimes I'm like, oh shit, like let me go on a couple of dates this week. Boom, 8 hours gone, you know? And so, and plus you don't even know the person. You don't know if you like them or not. I think it's more draining to be single pursuing women than it is to have one loyal woman in your life I think it's a cheat code actually to be able to accomplish more.
I've heard that from people that when they're involved, and this isn't everybody, because it's definitely not, this is definitely not even my wife, thankfully. But a lot of people have said to me that are in relationships, they've said that my wife or girlfriend or significant other says that I work too much and I don't spend enough time with them. So they feel like a pressure of saying, shit, you know what I mean? I'm going to have to sacrifice a little bit of working on what I'm doing to try to fulfill and keep this relationship happy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I would argue if that relationship wasn't there, as men, you would probably want a relationship. Like, no man wants to be celibate, you know, just building their business. Like mm-hmm. that man, anyone who's like highly driven is going to want like a woman in their life. Like those two things go hand in hand, I think. And so I think it's kind of an illusion that, you know, your woman takes away from you. Because I know at times in my life when I've had like one girl by my side, I can actually be at peace and not have to like go out. Like I love going out, but I don't like it. It is a lot of energy, you know, and time dedicated to that. So
Taylor, you ever run into that issue if you're out traveling, or do you still travel now that you have a woman in your life that you're about to marry?
She's in Costa Rica.
Yeah. We're in Costa Rica right now.
Oh, you're in Costa Rica right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Our home base is in Salt Lake. We actually moved to Salt Lake about a year and a half ago. So we spend a lot of time there. No, it's a good question, Richie. I think for us, like, I was definitely working. So Diane and I have been together for just over, 2 years, and when it was in January. I think the first year that we were together, I was working a lot more. And there were definitely specific months where I was working, like, all the time, like, to make, you know, grow the business. There were crunch moments. But I've definitely, we both value, like, having a lot of leisure time, and like, you know, especially we both value like spirituality, like doing our meditations in the morning together and doing fun things together. So I've set up my business to where like I don't have to work like crazy hours. I mean, I could if I want to, like, and who knows, maybe next year, the year after, I will go back to working, you know, 40 hour weeks. I don't think so. But we found a flow that works for us. You know, I don't like to work all the time, you know, like I enjoy having the leisure time, you know. But like I said, there were times where I did have to crunch, and she was okay with it, because like I just, you know, communicated to her, like, look, we're having a rough month right now. Like, I need to fucking go, you know, like we had that happen a couple times. So
it's gonna be grind
I think
time.
As long as you're, yeah, I think as long as the most important thing is like as a man, you're valuing your vision and you're pursuing that. And like, you know, as long as you're communicating an enticing vision to your woman, like, and honey, like, this is where we're headed, this is where we're going, and she's on board and she's excited about it, I don't think she's going to complain about you working 8-9 hours a day.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I feel bad, honestly, for the people that run into that issue, because it's like, I feel like sometimes if a woman can't be understanding, and I'm probably going to get a lot of shit in the comments for this one, but if a woman can't be understanding to let a man, if a man has a vision and a dream and a plan, and I feel like each one, the man and the woman, should be supportive of one another. So if the man's working his ass off to provide for the household or provide for the person or for the kids or whatever the situation would be, because everybody has different situations. If one or the, and the vice versa goes for the woman, if she has some kind of dream and aspirations and the man's not understanding because the man's like wanting that attention, which it doesn't usually happen that way, but sometimes it does. I feel like the other person should be a little understanding and say, okay, you're trying to grind, you're trying to hustle for us and not just for you.
Yeah.
It's good you guys don't run into that issue, because a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what the make or break is though, Richie. The make or break is like, as men, we want connection, but we don't really need to feel like emotionally, like, so, like, you know, like we just want like 100% to be respected. Women, they want to feel like they can open up and be emotionally vulnerable with their partner. So if you're going to work 8, 9, 10 hours, great. You better set aside at least for my relationship, I know that I need to give her at least 30 to 60 minutes a day where like she feels like emotionally that we're connecting, you know? And if I do that, like I could work 12 hours a day. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Richie? That's my experience.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think you hit it right on that. Yeah. I think women need to feel that emotional connection, because men, I mean, we're wired differently, right? We male and female, we're wired differently to think differently, feel differently, you know, all that stuff. Men, I feel like men are programmed to get out there and provide. Like, to sum it up in simple terms, and I know it's not simple terms, but I feel like women are more nurturers, and men are more providers, like naturally built that way. You know what I mean?
Men want sex and respect. That's all we want.
we want to hit it. We want to hit it. And you know, if you let us hit it too early, then you know, maybe you're not the one, but maybe you are the one. Maybe you are the one. I don't know. Maybe you are the one.
Sex and respect. Women want
emotion. Sex and respect. There we go. We want sex and respect.
Yeah, women want emotional respect.
Oh my God. You guys, speaking of sex, well, let's just keep it on with the sex thing. When you guys travel abroad, you guys banging everybody or what's going on, you know, when you're in different countries?
Yeah.
Yo, Romer's over there, salsa dance. He's like, hey.
Yeah, that's actually like I was kind of alluding to earlier. Like, it was actually kind of a problem in Mexico City. Like, because it's like Tinder in America, you're probably too old for Tinder, or like you never.
Well, wait, hold on. I'm gonna let you. I just have to tell you this because Tinder, right? Tinder, because I think that was probably one of the oldest online dating and one of the first like actual like mainstream dating thing. And now you have things like Bumble and swipe right, swipe left, swipe up, swipe down, swipe your sister's ass. All this stuff, right? Back in the day when I was growing up, when that shit started coming out, only like desperate people that like. Were like desperate that had no social skills to go out. Yeah. Like it was taboo. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now it's completely normal. It's like, if you don't do that and you're single, like what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me explain this. Like in Mexico, I could match with like eights and nines on Tinder and like actually go hang out with them. And then plus salsa dancing, like you meet higher quality women in my opinion. But in the States, dude, I get like fives on Tinder. I matched with a nice girl this morning, but it's rare to have like a good match. And so like
how does that even work?
Like, you're a white dude in Latin America. Every single night you could have a different girl if you wanted to, you know, because these apps work. Or you could just go out and meet girls too. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's not like that in the States, but it's certainly like a little bit. It's definitely different here. Like it doesn't work in the States. Tinder doesn't work. Yeah. I have to go out and salsa dance and like, you know, as a man, I think literally
you have to show everybody how you move in the hips.
Exactly. I gotta like put some work in here. So that's actually why I came back is to,
how does that even work though? Like if you, like, are you, when you say you get eights and nines in like, I don't know, in Colombia, Mexico or wherever, but you get like fives here. What does that mean? Does that mean like,
I'm not going out with fives.
Well,
but how do you get that number? I've never used the site. I don't know how it works. Like, is it like,
I just look at the girl that match with it. Then on Tinder, I'm like this, I must've accidentally swiped right. Or like been like really desperate or something. Cause I'm no way I'm meeting up with this girl right now.
Yeah. Like,
even in Miami.
It's all data and numbers. And for whatever reason, there's too many men searching for too few women in major US cities.
Yeah. Like, if you're a white dude in Latin America, it means you have money in their head. It means that you're a high value man because you're traveling there. Like you automatically check all these boxes. Whereas if in America, like you better
be the common Joe.
In America, the top 40% of women, if you're a 6.5 to a 10, you don't even need to be on Tinder. You just need to walk out down the street. You know what I'm saying? To get, you know, whereas, so you have the 80% of men going after the bottom, you know, 40% of 50% of women. And it's like, it's not, the odds are not in your favor.
Yeah. It's the same thing in Mexico, but the only difference is we're at the top like 1% in Mexico. Whereas here, in order to get the top 1%, I'm not saying we can't be, but we definitely have to like show the woman. And it's kind of hard to display that just on Tinder. You have to like meet her in person, show her you make six figures, show her that you're 6 feet, show her that, like all these different things, you know?
Yeah.
It's that Miami profile, right? Miami, you got to make 7 figures. You know, you got to make 7 figures. You got to be in crypto. You got to own multiple businesses, travel. You have to own private jets. You have to have all this shit, you know. Thank God that I met my wife 14 years ago when things were still kind of normal in the world. Yeah. Slightly. I don't think anything's ever been normal, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So switching gears, you said, Avery, you said that you have 2 apps now. I remember back when we had talked a while ago, you had restrictedinventory.com and you were showing me at your conference, which we'll get into as well. But the app you showed me was restrictedinventory.com, where people send in books, like you said earlier, textbooks, I think you said, like school books, college books, stuff like that. But then you mentioned another app that you're doing. What do you? How many apps do you have, and what are you doing to run?
Oh, really, my focus right now. My focus is GoToLister, and okay. This is basically it's like an inventory lab alternative. And the reason why I created it was inventory lab isn't what it could be. It could be a lot better, and so that's what we've been working on the last couple of years. It helps optimize your workflow, helps you manage your inventory, helps you price your inventory better up front. And that's been my focus for the last year.
Now, are you designing this app yourself, or do you partner with a programmer, or how are you developing this app?
The first year I didn't even partner. I paid a bunch of Indians to make it, and it was, they were really intelligent. They made like a decent software, but it was just hell working with them. They didn't want to work weekends. They wouldn't work nights. Their nights, which would be my day. So if there was a bug, we had to wait 8 hours for it to get fixed. And so I scratched the whole project. He literally flew to America. I met with him in person. I said, "You guys suck. I don't want to work with you." He put him in my Toyota Corolla, and he was like, "Why are you driving this car?" He's like, "I talked to you guys more money than this." And I'm like, "Bro, I'm paying you like $1,000 a week," which was a ton of money for me. And I'm just like, "Dude, like that's where all my money's going." And then I scratched that project, partnered with somebody who reached out to me on Instagram who built their own app for wholesale. And for Amazon sellers, like a wholesale list app, you like upload the UPCs, it tells you if the products are profitable or not. And he couldn't get any customers for that app because he didn't know how to market. I know how to market. He knows how to build. So we partnered. He coded it. I gave him equity. And now that's the partnership we have. So that's how GoToLister started.
Well, let me ask you this. With being two successful young men on relatively, I want to say, the same journey. Is that fair to say, the same journey?
Similar journey.
Okay. Similar journey. You know, you had said this programmer had said, you know, "Oh, you're driving the same car. I thought you had more money than that." You know, when it comes to like face value, right? What people see, because a lot of people can either make a lot of money and not give a shit about things like cars, clothes, or fancy cars, like shit like that, right? And then there are other people that are successful that might say, "Hey, you know what? I want to buy it because I like it. I like the fancy car. I like the fancy clothes," right? If they could do it. What are your thoughts on like people gaining success, coming into some money, and then, you know, do you feel like, you know, do you feel like you need to get that like new thing, or do you feel like that new thing just kind of satisfies an insecurity within yourself?
I think that everyone has like a different definition of high value. And for me, a high value man is someone who's traveled the world, someone who speaks multiple languages, someone who's intelligent, honest, kind. And like, those are kind of like my top things. Like if I want to flex on somebody, I want to have a strong body, be good at martial arts, have businesses that are profitable. Like that's my flex. You know, we all have our own flexes, and maybe a car would come with that one day, but I certainly don't want to sacrifice all these for like a superficial, you know, outlook. I don't even like cars that much. I probably will have a nice car one day, but my rule is my net worth has to be 10X whatever car I have. You know, so if I'm going to get a $400,000 car, I got to be worth at least $4 million. I think it's silly and stupid to do it otherwise. Like, why are you going to give up 10% of your net worth for like some, you know, like
that depreciates. The
whole idea of having like a vehicle like that is to show, oh, I have so much money that the car I drive is worth more than, you know, your whole net worth. But if you're sacrificing, like if you're putting all your money into like 100 or 200% of your net worth, it's just ridiculous in my opinion.
And now you said you're doing wholesale now.
Yeah.
And Taylor, what are you doing right now as far as like running your business? Like you doing retail arbitrage or?
No, I transitioned to wholesale in March of last year.
So now are you guys still using prep centers?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Taylor, are you still using that same prep center that we use together?
Oh, dude, you know that. You know what? Supposedly
we have to talk about that for a second, man. Because
supposedly Warner is using them, and they do a great job. So, and I don't actually. You know what? I actually don't not believe that. Like, I think that might be true. I think Julio seems like a smart guy, and he also seems like he's got a good operation. Like, he doesn't rub me that way. Like, he doesn't rub me as like a guy that is dropping. What's that?
He rubs you.
Yeah, he rubs me so good, Julio. Yeah. But I think here's what happened. I think for those of you guys that don't know, Richie and I got screwed on this prep center. It took like 6 weeks or 2 months, whatever, to send our inventory in for Q4.
I got screwed with my Q4 inventory that year.
what I learned was like we weren't paying anything in prep, you know. So of course, if he's got 100 clients and he's figuring out what's going to go out the door, and he got slammed that year.
But of course, but hold on, I'm gonna push back on that for a second because he was allowing us as a free service in exchange for promotion and to bring in new clients. The tracker that I had showed that 16 people for me signed up to use him as a service. And this guy, it started out great. He was nice. His staff was nice. They, you know, I'd go there, drop off the truckload and, you know, whatever, I'd drop it off and I'd put it into the computer, whatever the process was. And then we'd say, okay, you can send this stuff out or whatever. And it started out great. But then that one time where I dropped things off at the end of November, and then they didn't get shipped out till December 23rd. Everything I bought from Kohl's, I either took a loss or I recalled to sell like by myself.
Yeah.
But the thing that pissed me off is that he told me he didn't have the right size box to send out some of the Paw Patrol or the Minnie Mouse things. And I went to Home Depot. I bought 50 or 60 something boxes myself. I had to bring a prep center boxes so they could ship these certain items out. And then on top of that, I had to take some of the stuff out because I'm like, listen, I got to ship this out. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. And then he tried to tell, you know, it was just a big mess. And, you know, I was already on the fence about not using prep centers to begin with. And then that happened. And I'm like, see, this is why I don't use prep centers. Like, I tried to solidify.
Prep centers aren't the problem. I mean, I have a prep center right now that I'm paying $1.50. And they do an amazing job. Like, they haven't made a mistake. I've been using them the past year, and I'm paying them $4,000 a month, so I think, and they have not made. I don't think they made a single mistake. Like,
are you using Chaz out in Oregon?
No, I can't. I'm not even saying who I'm using because I don't share because I know better now. But they.
Well, I don't blame you for it. I don't blame you and look at you as you referred me to this guy, you know.
Yeah, no, I know you don't. But yeah, I've sent them over 100,000, probably more. Yeah, way more than that. Probably $300,000-$400,000. I mean, they haven't lost a single unit. I'm sure they've lost a little, but not like whole boxes of stuff, you know. So
now you didn't want to stay into like the whole social media thing, because I noticed on, you know, in the earlier days when you would upload TikToks and Instagram stories and reels and stuff like that. And we mentioned earlier, like, you know, you with the girl and you'd be recording and stuff like that. And you kind of did things more on like an entertainment level, like you would try to make things funny or you would be singing with things. Like, did you ever think to yourself that you wanted to go the way of like social media and kind of like entertain and do it? Cause I feel like when I was doing that, I was rolling more into the, let me entertain people than let me show people, even though I was doing both. So did you ever come to realize and say, hey, you know what? I want to entertain people. Like when we went to Walmart, we went and had lunch. We had oysters in Fort Lauderdale. We were drinking. I was having Long Islands. I forget what you were having, but we were friggin' tanked. We were shit faced. And we went to Walmart. We would throw in ball pits. Like, that video is a classic video, man.
Being
entertaining. And we were like, oh, did we get the TV? Should we scan the TV? And you asked the woman, you were like, hey, why does the Walmart suck so bad? Like, why does the app suck? And she's looking at you like, what? Like, did you ever feel like you wanted to go the entertainment route versus like
that's business? That's a great question, Richie. Yeah, that's a really great question. I always got a lot of enjoyment out of making people, you know, especially feel inspired but also laugh. And I love that about social media. I think I went through an interesting experience, definitely at Miami the first year. Like, I had a lot of people, you know, like I probably, you know, 10, 15 people there were, you know, there because of through TikTok for me. And even the going into the second year was this really interesting transition where the nature of how I saw content sort of changed. And I don't view it as something bad. Like, I still make content to help promote Miami. Like, I, you know, but I began to look at it a little differently. And I think, like, at first I used it as a means of like entertaining people, but I was also very alone, like all by myself. Like, I didn't have a lot of friends. I knew I couldn't live with my family. And I really was, I hadn't like, I, when I was living out of my car too, like August, 2020, and I was using it as a way to connect with people. you know? But the experience that I went through, like the first Miami year, was like, I just felt like almost like an imposter. Like I had all of this attention and respect, and part of me didn't even feel like I deserved it because I was barely making $50,000 a year. You know what I'm saying? So I guess the, on my list of, now that I'm in a relationship, like my, and I feel like right now I'm way more grounded. Like I have way more like high quality friendships and like people I really fuck with and respect. And like, yes, I could get back on social media and build a brand, but it's just always felt like more of a distraction for me. And sort of, I don't know how to describe it. It's just been, I fell out of love with it. You know, like I'm a guy that really values like authenticity and the realness of relationships. And sometimes social media can feel kind of fake,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I get it 100%.
Yeah, I could pour myself. I got a keg of beer in the fridge. Should I start drinking?
That could get interesting.
No, I'm just kidding. It's a good question, or Richie. Who knows? Maybe I'll get into comedy or something, or entertainment, or social media, maybe in the future. But for right now, I'm honestly really enjoying just like, you know, like everyday relationships outside of social media.
Yeah, and you know the reason why I asked that question is because you know I started selling on Amazon. You guys already know my story. I don't really have to get into it. But for those that don't know, I started selling on Amazon in 2018 and I started a YouTube channel to like kind of like follow my journey, which was what we've been talking about as far as like retail arbitrage, going into stores and all this shit. And the one thing I feel like I agree with you on is I agree that like the social media can feel almost like a like this. There's just this like fake, non-authentic feel about creating certain content. For instance, like I found myself and you know, I started out, I looked at my older videos and I said, wow, I'm going in. I was a very serious person. Okay, guys, like we're going to scan this item. I'm going to be able to profit this, you know, with shipping. And I was very like, this is how we're going to sell this item to make a profit. To fast forward 5 years later is fuck you. You ain't seeing my receipt. Fuck you. Like it just became this like, it almost became like a toxic environment. And I think it's because when you go into 5 to 10 Walmarts every day, 5 days a week for 3 years straight, and you're uploading in your, you feel the pressures of uploading a content and that pressure of once you get to a point where you see all these videos start taking off, now you feel, oh shit, I have to one up my last video. I have to keep this trend going. And I found myself that the confrontational videos, whether people want to agree with me or not, or regardless of how I feel, anything that involved kind of confrontation was generating views over, hey, showing people this is how you can make money. And it got to a point where I said, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Yeah. I don't want to do this. I hate Walmart. I can't go in there. Yeah, I just, I felt like I need to take a step back. Let me, because I love social media. I love entertaining. I love YouTube. I love that aspect of it. And that was taking precedence over why I was actually in those stores getting the products in the first place. So I said, you know what? I got to step back. I need a break. I need to just stop. And I stopped for a few months. And then I'm like, okay, how do I want to get back into it? What do I want to do? And I always said to myself, I've always wanted to do in-person podcast. I think I've been talking about podcasting for like over a year now. I just didn't know how I would do it. And I've always given people shit about doing exactly what we're doing now. You fucking doing virtual podcasting. You can't do a fucking camera and a mic and all this other shit. You got to do virtual. You can't do in person, right? But I found that there's value in doing virtual podcasting with certain people. Like not everything has to be in person. And it took me a long time to realize that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did.
No, I think it's awesome that you're starting this, Richie. I think that even if you build a couple people every month that follow you, like, and if you're sharing a good message, like, that's what matters. And I think that you made a really good point. Like, I think a lot of the younger generation is, but even me, I fell into the same thing. It's like these kids are doing some crazy ass shit for some views, and it's like, don't get me wrong, like. That attention is currency. It's great. But at the also, like, are you going to make yourself into a fool to get it? Right. Like,
are you going to lower your standards as a person just to be vulnerable for other people to get either a click or a like? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, did you hear about the guy who got shot? The DoorDash guy? He was trying to make a food delivery, and there was this TikToker or a YouTuber that was like harassing this guy, and he was like in his face. And the kid was like, guy, get away from me. Get away from me, please. Get away from me. He kept going. Like, he was literally putting the camera like in his face, like trying to prank him or whatever, like trying to be annoying. The kid that was a DoorDash took out a gun, fucking shot him. Shot him right in the leg. Said, get the fuck away from me. Boom. Done. And the kid, and the guy got off. He got off. He's like, I was defending myself. I don't know what this guy was doing. He was harassing me. He was in his face. Wow. I didn't know if he had anything. And he got off. They let him go. He saw him not guilty.
Damn.
And it was just.
He was kind of like playing a character.
Yeah.
I don't know. The kid was just doing. He was trying to do some kind of prank on the food delivery guy.
You know what the irony is for me, though, to sit here and on my high horse be like, yeah, like, I don't want to do crazy things for attention. The irony of that is, in person, I fucking love doing crazy ass shit to get people.
Yeah, I do. Listen, I do too. I do too.
Diana and I are driving on the road here in Costa Rica, and like, there's all these tourists on the road, and we're just like moaning in the highest pitch, like, oh, and groups. Diana's doing it too, and like, these groups of like 15 people are turning around, like just like totally scared. But it's not as addicting. Like, when you're getting millions of views or hundreds of thousands of views, it's like a drug, dude. And
it is a drug. It is a drug.
It can take over your psyche if you're not careful. And, you know.
Listen, I used to have an air horn. And here in Florida, I think Florida has some of the worst drivers in the country. And, you know, people will cross the street. They either jaywalk or they'll be in a crosswalk, and they walk really slow, or they walk really fast to get in front of you, and then they slow down, right? So I had an air horn in my truck from, like, I don't know. I bought it on clearance at Walmart a long time ago. So I brought it up to the front seat with me, and every time somebody would, like, run fast in the crosswalk and then slow down as I would drive past, like, and they, oh, shit, they jump. And I'm like, yo, I got to get that on video, man, if I'm going to do that. It's just funny.
Yeah, dude, people, that's great.
Oh, my God, man. So let's talk. You guys mentioned Miami. You guys have mentioned MSC, Miami Sellers Conference, all that good stuff. You guys have been doing. You guys throw a yearly, or is it twice a year or once a year conference in Miami? Once a year. Okay, I remember one year. I think you did it twice. Was that the first year you did it?
No, we just did it like maybe 7 or 9 months apart or something. It wasn't a
full year. We did it in August and then in the spring, but it was two different years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had the pleasure of joining you on your first two Miami Sellers Conference, which was super fun, by the way. Do you want to tell people about it and like what it is, what it's about, and what they can expect from it?
Yeah. I mean, basically we get a bunch of high level Amazon sellers together and we put them all in the same room and then magic happens. So we have like 30 speakers this year. We got Watch Me Amazon, Amazon Live, which Miles, Warner, me, Taylor, a ton of other people, booksellers doing 800,000 a month, doing millions a year. We have just people from all corners of the market, booksellers, OA sellers, wholesalers, private label. And we all just come in the same room together, hang out, and we don't force anything, but good things happen. And it's Miami's a magical city.
The cool thing is, a lot of these speakers that we have, I mean, we're spending several five figures to pay for the travel accommodations to get these speakers here, which, I mean, Amazon Lit, they charge, I think, like $30,000 or something to be in their inner circle. Miles and Warner, I think they charge like $3,000. A lot of these speakers don't even have a coaching program, but if they did, they could charge the equivalent amount. And I don't know what our general admission ticket is, but it's like, that ticket gets you access to a 3-day event where you can literally ask these people any question you possibly want, you know?
Yeah. And I remember the first couple of times I went down there, it was a good vibe. There's a lot of great people around there. You learned a lot. I think one of the important things is too, is when you saw the speakers up there talking, you got that information, but I felt like one of the most beneficial things that you could do is there aren't a lot of events or conferences that allow you to mingle as freely as people could with the speakers. So like when you were networking and stuff like that, like you weren't able to, like, you can't go to like ASD and mingle with a lot of those unless you have special tickets, right? Like you need like backstage passes, so to speak. But at your event, you can have these knowledgeable people there, and when they're done speaking, when that speaking time's over and you have like networking time, you could just go up to anybody freely and just talk. And if they're willing to, you know, say whatever they have to say. And that's super valuable in itself.
Yeah, and that, like, I went to so many Amazon networking events before, and I just understand the value of like a little room 50 to 100 people. You know, we're getting bigger. We did 160 people last year. Who knows what we'll be at this year? But it's just, there's a lot of value in just being around a bunch of people that are selling on Amazon full time, doing 7, 8, even 9 figures. You know, it just kind of opens your brain to the possibility. You become friends with them. Like, I'm friends with all the speakers, and it's because I've met them in person, and I've shared drinks with them, and I've seen they're human. They've seen I'm human. And it's a lot more powerful than just meeting someone virtually or, you know, DMing them. So community is everything.
Yeah, it's been cool, because I remember when I was there talking with everybody. And then after the event, we would all go out to a like special dinner and sit around, shoot the shit, talk. It was a good time. You know, I have Taylor. I'm sure he could probably attest to this when he gets back. I have probably one of the best videos of Taylor when he was going to use the bathroom, and he did a handstand, and he put his feet on the wall as he did the handstand. He starts twerking upside down, and Jameson is right next to me, and he's looking at him, and he's dying laughing. He doesn't know what's going on, and I'm looking at him like, what is going on? And then as he did that, a woman came out of the other side of the bathroom and sees him doing it. She's like, the hell?
Yeah.
It was in this fancy restaurant. It was just funny, man. It was
a good time. Wait, this was at what did I do?
I forgot.
Dude, you did a handstand in the restaurant we were at the last sellers conference that I was at with you guys. We went out to this it was a seafood restaurant just over the bridge in North Miami. And Jameson was right next to me, and you started twerking upside down with your legs. Like, and the woman come out of the woman's side. I have to send you the video, dude. It's the funniest thing in the world.
I think I remember that.
You just were like, oh yeah, and you were just twerking upside down.
Yo, the first thing you did in conference was so bad. I got blackout drunk at the after party in 2022. I was so embarrassed. It was so bad.
Dude, let's talk about 2022, because I wasn't there. You guys didn't ask me to come. You guys didn't ask me to come back, man.
I did. I was the DMs, bro.
Hold on. No, you asked
me. I heard DMs right now.
I had to. I did. I was like, fucking unfollow. That's right. I was like, unfollow. No, unfollow.
I guarantee you. I'll open up our DMs right now. Hold on.
Listen,
right now.
You invited me to come after I said to you, hey, or you might have heard me talk about it on a live. Where all of a sudden I had a magic thing, it'll pop up. It was like very last minute. And I was like, huh. I was with these guys their first two. I was with these guys their first two conferences, and they didn't invite me back. And then I started thinking more logically. And I was like, you know what though? Who the fuck am I to demand or expect them to invite me for a third time? Because in my head, I was like, oh, well, we're friends. I thought, like, not even say, hey, I'm gonna have a story.
Yo, you're invited. And then I said, just been busy. We want you there if you can make it. We just want different keynote speakers this year. We're gonna do panels and different networking time. Let me know if you want to talk. LOL. I've done a poor job.
You know what I think did happen? I think that what did happen was we probably waited till the last minute, and you assumed Richie.
Well, that was the year Taylor wasn't even with me.
So listen. Yeah. So this is what I heard.
I almost backed out. I almost didn't even take part in the event that year.
Well,
yeah. So I was like hearing the thing on my back. I'm stressed in Colombia. My Amazon accounts are getting shut down. Nobody knew about it. I wasn't posting on social media.
If you would have texted either one of us like a month before and been like, "Yo, I want to come through," you know, we could have worked something out for sure.
Like, so I was. It seemed like everything was falling into place, and I felt like, "What the hell?"
You're lucky this ain't in person, Richie. I'd be taking your ass to the ground, boy.
You'd be hopping on my back with a beer saying, let's go run down the Walmart aisles. Like, come on, man. Who you shit? So,
I never heard about that. Reezy it's important to know that Reezy is a provocateur. I would say this to his face, you know, and it's important to realize, I think that Reezy says things that a lot of other influencers also think. And this is a funny thing. It's like, you're not the only one that's gotten upset about the event or had beef with somebody at the event. We've had people call us out on social media multiple times. People are just kind of sensitive, you know? And what was I about to say? Who else? What I love doing at these events is, like, if I know two people have like beef, Like Michaela and Warner had a little bit of beef last year. I just love grabbing both of them, bringing them together and be like, look, I love both y'all. Y'all are great people. What the fuck's going on? Like with a few beers or whatever, and then let them hash it out. Like Amazon lit and watching the Amazon. We all know they kind of have like not real beef, but like they're both the big dogs in the space. Of course, they're going to think like when they talk about, when either of them talks about like all these other people doing millions a month, it's like what other people doing millions a month? Like there's only a handful that post on social media. You're probably talking about each other, you know, and it's just right. It's the nature of driven people to be a little bit competitive. So I completely empathize with people when they do have those states of mind. And Reezy, I will say this, Reezy is a good person. But he has pissed me off before. You can ask him about this. So restrictedinventory.com popped up. And the thing I respect about Reezy is he's very direct and upfront. I was in the car when I told him about my business model. We were driving around in Chicago at another event. And he said, I'm going to copy you. So at least he told me, but he actually did. He copied my whole business model. He called it Reezy.biz. Respect that he didn't like completely copy the branding and stuff. But his business kind of fell apart. But for a while, me and him were like direct competitors. And I was really hurt. I was like, damn, this kind of sucks. But like, it's capitalism. It's the nature of the business. And at the end of the day, he felt like he could have done that because he'd been in business for 15 years before me. And so he's like, I'm the OG in this space. I should be running this service, not Romer. And so we've had like our back and forth. But Reezy is the type of person that he'll just say shit how it is. And I guarantee you that if you guys were in person together, y'all would be boys. I promise you guys.
The one thing that did piss me off about the whole Reezy thing is when he had messaged me and because he had heard that I had done the video because I was questioning why, like in the video that I did, which is still up in the video that I did. But by the time this airs, it probably won't be because this will be 100% podcast channel. But in the video I did do about the incident, I said, you know, if you want to talk about how I'm doing and you think that what I'm doing is wrong, like you didn't even come to tell me and say, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm going to say this at the conference because I feel like your business model is flawed and I want you to be prepared because like, did you not think I was going to hear about it? Or like I had like at least three people message me and send me links to it before I even saw it myself. And I'm like, damn, son. And not that he's obligated to do that, right? But when you feel a mutual respect for somebody, you might want to give him a heads up and be like, hey, I'm going to do this. And it's, you know, it's just my critique of what your thing is. And then when I did do the video saying, hey, you're saying that I'm fucking up. Well, look, I mean, this is our numbers. Compare apples to apples. And it looks like I'm getting more views than you. And I'm doing X, Y, and Z. And it just became like this petty thing. But then he messaged me. He DM'd me, which whatever, you know, he's like, oh, you couldn't even tell me. And I told him, I was like, you didn't even tell me you were going to talk about me at the conference. And now you're upset because I did a video questioning what, you know, whatever you did. So whatever, to make a long story short, he started saying, well, I keep seeing you, I'm going to block you. And I'm like, all right, dude, well, fucking block me. And then he blocked me. And then I went on this fucking tirade, bro. On like, I must have uploaded like 15 reels being like, you're fucking blah, blah, blah. You're doing this. Like, I wasn't calling him names. I was just like, bro, you're a fucking punk to fucking say all this shit, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, I went on this tirade. And, you know, it's not something that I hold against him. Honestly, at the end of the day, I really don't give a shit. I felt like I was hurt because I looked up to him and the way it fell was that like the puzzle pieces seemed to match. Cause I was like, oh, this person's saying that, you know, Romer and Taylor didn't invite me to the event because Reezy said that he wouldn't show up if they invited me to the event. Cause Reezy wanted the total spotlight for whatever reason, because even if me and Reezy are in the same room, bro, Reezy's been in the game longer than me. Like, I don't feel like either of us are a threat to each other. We have different, different things. You know what I mean?
So Avery and I are both on the agreeance that no one, I haven't even heard that through the grapevine. That's how untrue that is. Well, I thought you were going to say is that you were, you know, you didn't have slides for your speech and you were stumbling through some points, but that was what I thought.
That was only on the second time.
I thought you were going to say somebody made funny for doing the IP complaint thing, which somebody did. Somebody was like, oh, Richie's a dumbass for saying don't worry about IP complaints.
I don't think I'm a dumbass. You know how many times IP complains? I rip up the paper, I throw it in the fucking trash. Yeah. I burn it. I make Kindle.
There was like one person that was vocal to me after the event, and I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, like that's his truth.
We didn't hear any. That ain't true about that. Just to let you know.
Yeah, I mean the first time I prepared. We had you guys had on the Rick Ross every day I'm hustling. And then the second time I just kind of went up there, and then, you know, I felt like it was like almost like I get that all the time. And I feel like sometimes people ask me questions because they know how I'm going to respond. So like, I'm not a whiteboard speaker. Like, I'm not like somebody who's going to give you this, like, you know, let me put my glasses on, my bifocals, let me open my book and let me read you my professional answer. And like, no, like, what do I do? I'm going to give you a real world answer. What do you do with IP complaints? I fucking throw them out. That's what I do with them. I appeal it and I try to figure out and submit a receipt. Like, I don't worry about IP complaints. And people are like, oh, you don't worry about IP complaints? No, because I've carried 8 IP complaints on my account and I've still remained green. But I also preface to say, but that's not going to be like that for everybody, because not everybody will have a big account to do that. If you've only been selling on Amazon for 3 months and you get 8 IP complaints, you're probably going to be suspended. Yeah. But like, don't, like, you can't ask me a question and then when I give you like my just my plain Jane answer, like, that's just how I am. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's how I'll always be, you know?
Yeah. Well, guess what? You know, 48 laws of power never outshine the master. And sometimes you gotta, when you're getting close to where your mentor hits, you have to be willing to let go and say, all right, sorry, I'm upsetting you, but that's part of the game.
Part of the game, man. You guys still messing with ice baths? You guys were doing ice baths for a while.
Yeah, I got a pool out here that I go in. It's cold enough here in Tennessee to still ice bath in it, but I don't think Taylor's got access right now, but when he does.
Right now, I don't. But when I get back in Salt Lake, I bought one of those big horse troughs, like the 4 foot long. So when I get back to Salt Lake, I'll be hitting them every day.
What happened in Miami with the ice baths? I thought I saw something about like you guys had the ice baths on the balcony.
Yeah, we had it on a balcony, and they told us that we can't have that on the balcony, so we had to move it inside. That was
was it too heavy for the balcony or?
Yeah, something like that. According to code, that was too risky or something stupid, you know. And Avery, even in his apartment in Nashville, he got in trouble for having a little pool outside. He's on the first floor, which didn't make any sense. yeah, stupid rules. But
oh my god.
So
well, are you guys having a 1 day event or a 2 day event?
No, this year will be the first year that it'll be 2 years. So we'll probably do most of the speakers the first day. And then on Sunday, we got the venue for 2 days. We're going to do a bunch of panels. So we're going to like split into a bunch of groups and have people can go and sit at a bunch of different tables with like one or two of the different panel members and ask questions. Basically, it's like the high level people that we wanted to come to the event that aren't necessarily getting a speaking spot that mm-hmm. we want our audience, our members, to be able to have access to for to be you know, several to. Hours and be able to ask whatever
questions. Super smart. Super smart. Where do you see you guys? Like, what's the future for Avery and Taylor? Like, do you see yourself continuing this wholesale business for this foreseeable future, or would you rather be able to grow this conference and grow it into this big masterpiece where all you're focusing on is this conference and a little bit of in-betweens?
Both. I don't do both.
But do you think you can manage both?
Yeah, for sure. I think they all tie in because my big goal, yeah, Amazon's great, but I'm building this software for the Amazon community. And a huge part of the Amazon community is this event every year. So the event's like, that's like the focal point each year. We all meet together. I get to touch base with everyone. And then for the rest of the year, I'm working on my software and then maintaining selling on Amazon too. So that's kind of my vision.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll be selling on Amazon for the foreseeable future. That's not going anywhere. I'm like really excited about crypto right now. I'm putting a good chunk of my profits into that. Yeah, that's and then
what are you what are you interested in crypto? What are you buying?
I mean, I'm just like hodling kind of Bitcoin, you know, and buying as much Bitcoin as I can. And I think that's going to be like a huge opportunity to make a lot of money this year or next year. Like I think we're going to see a big sizable jump in Bitcoin. I think we already are seeing a lot of movement, so I'm excited about that. Like, I think I'm growing to my Amazon business. I think I'll probably hit a point where, like, I'm not trying to build the biggest Amazon business ever. Like, I think I last year I did 1.7 million. You know, my goal is to double again, maybe get to 2 or 3 million, and then just sort of coast and continue to pull profits and put it into crypto. And yeah, I think, and then hopefully have financial freedom and have a few million in the bank. And like, by the time I'm like 31, 32.
Do you guys accept crypto for payment for your event, or have you ever thought about accepting crypto?
You know what? I don't know if ClickFunnels, we use ClickFunnels. Does they have an option for that? I'm guessing no.
Oh, I don't think so.
Probably not. Yeah. Cause I know Shopify does. I think Shopify uses Coinbase Commerce, and I'm not even sure if Coinbase Commerce even exists. They might use something different, but when you open up a Shopify store, you can accept like Bitcoin, Ethereum, shit like that.
I mean, the events are a lot of work. Like, it's just for 6 months out, the work starts. It's a lot of work and just, you know, constant coordinating things. But the day of it, the whole weekend just feels, it's such a blessing to be able to, not only, like Avery said, get everybody together, but also like, we're leading an experience to give people something that can change their lives, you know? And I think that's a really rewarding feeling.
I think so too. I think you guys are doing a great job, honestly. I think you guys have taken something that I was able to see from the first time when we had, I can't remember his name, but he was like DJing from his like iPhone or iPod. And it was like, John, that's what it was. John. Yes. So I remember he was over there, you know, in control of the music, and you put this thing together, and you know, it was cool to be a part of that and to see where that's gone from there to just a few years later, is pretty remarkable. So I mean, hats off to you guys. I think that's pretty cool.
What about you though? Where do you think, where do you see your focus being? Like, how much Amazon are you doing, and are you focusing on social media? Where do you see your future?
Yeah. So, you know, I took a good hiatus from Amazon the last few months, and I focused on trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, I feel like my calling is, I like doing the whole social media thing, the entertainment, the bringing value to the masses via the podcast. And, you know, I said to myself, if I'm out there doing retail arbitrage for 6 years, showing people what to buy and going live and trying to provide some kind of entertainment, but something valuable that you could go out and make money, why can't I do that the same in a different format? So I feel like doing these podcasts, because for me, when I would run my business, I would get my inspiration from all different walks of life. Like, I'd watch certain gamers, and I'd watch certain entertainers and certain entrepreneurs, and I would take bits and pieces from their show. And I'm like, oh shit. I was like, that's actually pretty good. I want to incorporate that. Like, Dr. Disrespect, the gamer on YouTube, and Flossie Carter, who does tech reviews, were probably some of the biggest influences in what I did in Walmart, as far as like, you know, Hustleholics and like Full Card Gang and all the hashtags would really come from my influence following Flossie Carter, when he would talk about Notification Gang, when he would start his lives or his premieres and stuff like that. And like taking docs, like sometimes over the top, but serious reaction. Like, it just, like, you start looking at this and you're like, man, I was like, I want to take a little bit from here and there and kind of incorporate it. But, you know, I see myself selling less on Amazon. I still sell on Amazon today, but I definitely sell a lot less on Amazon than I had. And who knows, maybe I'll get back into it the way I was. But I think right now I want to focus on social media, YouTube. I run a bunch of different YouTube channels. Three of them should be monetized by the summertime. You know, I just want, I like entertaining. I like being in front of the camera. I like talking to people. I like meeting people. It's just, I think this is something that's more better for my mental and still being able to provide value to people who would watch it. And there are people that are pissed off. They're like, oh, I subscribe for the retail arbitrage. And I'm like, well, look, you can't have somebody hold your hand forever. I mean, I uploaded over 1,700 videos. You know, I uploaded a video shorts per day. I did two lives every weekend for over 3 years, you know, question and answer on Saturday, live in Walmart on Sunday. And, you know, it just, like I said earlier, shit just takes a toll on you. And, you know, I'm just going to go a different direction and provide value through everybody else. Cause I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. If I'm the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room. You know?
Yeah. I think that's awesome, Richie, that you're, you know, changing it up and doing something you want, because at the end of the day, we can't let the views dictate what kind of our content is. It's, you know, it's, and that's, it's got to be what you want.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say to some of the people that want to get started? Like, if you have somebody that just says, hey, you know what? I understand that you sold books and, you know, you started with X amount of money, but, you know, I only have $50 of, you know, in today's economy, I only have 50 to like 100 bucks to like really kind of try something out. You know, what would you recommend to people for them to try to generate and maximize their earnings, their return rather?
I would say use books. Get them for free. They make up 10% of Amazon sales. You can find them in any city. You don't need to pay for them. Do free book pickups. Go to library sales. Pay a dollar or two per book. I mean, you could, if you spend $500 on books, it's not uncommon to, you know, make a couple thousand from that. That's like on the low end, you know? And so you can really compound your money fast, understand how to build shipments, understand Amazon FBA. It's a very low risk business. And then from there, build your capital up, get a few, you know, five figures, like Taylor says, and then go into something else. OARA.
Yeah, I would start with free shit. Like you can go into on eBay, you can go into a retail store and you could list, like I used to go into the Walmart and I would list things. And then when they sold, I'd go buy it or get the money. I don't think you can do that now, but I used to get the money and then go buy it and then freaking ship it out, you know?
You can still do that. You just risk it not being there.
Yeah, you just get creative, you know. Like you could couch flip. I would flip couches because you can get couches on Craigslist.
You know, right? I actually used to flip couches, and then I was thinking like books are so much better because I'm making $2,500 profit per couch.
As long as you can get the books for free though, because $50 is not a lot of money, you know.
Yeah, right.
You got to get to like $1,000. You got to get to $1,000, and then learn the skill of sales rank and keep up. That's like your priority is flip free stuff until you can get that first $1,000 and then go do some RAOA or something.
But, you know, another question I get is when you sell on Amazon, you know, do you feel the need to buy all these extras? And what I mean by extras are, you know, Keepa or listing or UPC scrubbers, stuff like that. Do you feel like somebody starting out needs to get all of this, or do you feel like they can go without it for a certain time before?
It depends on what business model you're going after, but all of them have free trials, you know, all of them have free trials. And so with the book business, just download Scout IQ. That's all you need and get your first couple thousand in profit books before you get any other software, like prove the concept. You don't have to have Keepa, but I think that's like a staple for selling on Amazon. I would get it $17 a month. That's really it.
Yeah. What did you guys generate for, what was your revenue last year?
Me?
Both of you.
I did 1.7 million.
Oof. You beat Jameson. You beat Jameson with that one.
Yeah, I probably did like 500,000 or something. I dealt with a lot of account shutdowns. So.
Damn, account shutdown. So you've said that a couple of times, and you've said accounts like as in plural.
Yeah. So I kind of screwed up. Like my business, restrictedinventory.com, existed because my account could sell textbooks. No other accounts could sell textbooks. The reason why no other accounts could sell textbooks is textbooks are commonly counterfeited. I said, I'm smarter than everyone else. I'm luckier than everyone else. It's going to work out if you guys send me your books. Turns out I'm not smarter or luckier than everyone else. My account did get test buys from the brand because they knew that these titles were likely to be counterfeit. And even though 95% of my inventory wasn't counterfeit, there was a percent that we couldn't verify it was counterfeit. They make counterfeit books that are better quality, better condition than the real editions. They use higher quality That's material. Crazy. It's intellectual property you're paying for. So like a $200 book only costs, you know, $3 to make in India, and they can make it a higher quality version sometimes. Sometimes they make crappier versions. Long story short, that led to my first account shutdown. My account got reinstated, but then it was gated in textbooks. So I partnered with a few people that could also sell textbooks. Same thing happened to their accounts. And then eventually, because I logged into all the accounts on my device, they linked all the accounts together. And they said, Avery Martin's bad. He can't sell on Amazon anymore. He's probably a counterfeiter. And I don't blame him. I logged in from Spain, Colombia, Mexico. I logged in from all these different places. And they see me, you know, a brand who could sue them for millions of dollars is saying, hey, this person's at least sold like 12 counterfeit copies. Like, I don't blame them for what they did. So they shut down all my accounts, linked me together, said Avery can never sell on Amazon again. But I'm still selling. So
damn. So would you use a stealth account?
No, I just partnered with someone else. So they're a completely separate entity. I just helped them out. We split profits. So
cool.
My name's
Patrick. Avery's smart now. He's like, I don't even mention their fucking name.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't mention them either. Taylor, you were over there trying to flex your numbers, man. Pull up your numbers. Let's see what you did. You were trying to show the camera, but we couldn't see it.
Oh, me?
1.71 million.
Hold on a second. That's 12 months.
Is that the only ace?
1.74.
What ace is that showing at the bottom?
Get out of here, dude.
I asked Jameson this too when he was on the show. What is your go-to? Are you doing retail arbitrage at all, or are you just strictly wholesale? And if you are strictly wholesale, you don't have to tell me the product, but like Amazon Lit, for instance, said he loved household and grocery. That was his favorite category to sell. Jameson said he was like 95% toys. You know, do you have a go-to category?
Yeah. I'm doing health right now.
I would say health and personal care. It would be the one that I'm in. I found some products that were good, and then I spent months, probably 2-3, maybe a couple months, just like emailing suppliers, and I found a couple good suppliers, and I've been rolling with them for the last year. Just the same supplier, you know, got some really good pricing and just been buying some of the same products.
Nice. Thank you, Romer and Taylor, for joining me on the show. I appreciate you guys being on here, man. And listening to your story and sharing your story with everybody else.
Thanks for having us.
Namaste.
Until next time.
The light in me recognizes the light in each and every one of you.
Look what happens. Look, like, why does that fucking happen? Did you see that? Does it happen with you? What the fuck? Green screen magic, guys. I'll catch you guys on the next one. Make sure you check out next week's episode, and I'll catch you guys on the next one. Peace out. Woo!